believe it or not, we're still not out of chapter one. This is part E. What we are going to finish today, what is that? A, B, C, D, E. Part five of chapter one. We are going to start the narrative part of John's Gospel next week. We'll finally be through with these introductory comments, but they are so important. Some of the most powerful words that are spoken about Jesus that didn't come out of his own mouth are in this passage that we've spent the last 5 weeks on. So I don't apologize for that. They're important. I have to admit they're bigger than I am. I've taught this twice before. I learn stuff every time I study, which I hope I learn it. If we're still here, next time I teach it, I hope I learn new stuff. So you will do yourselves a great favor if you study yourself. And study because you want to know Jesus better. I love this gospel for the reason that it tells us things, one, that the other three gospels don't tell us. John was privy to information and present at events that none of the others were. John comes at it from a different slant, admittedly. And admittedly, in chapter 21, John says, this isn't everything. All four of us didn't tell you everything. All the pens and ink and paper on this planet couldn't tell you everything. But John says, I've told you these things. I've written these things, so that you could trust in, cling to, and rely upon Jesus, and that in doing that, you would have life, real life, life with a capital L. Last week, we looked at the four-word Christmas story. The Word became flesh. Hark the herald angels sing. I mean, it's very concise, but there was a lot of stuff in there. In fact, I'm not exactly sure that we got all the way through with verse 14 last week. We will pick up at verse 15. But just to catch us all up to speed, because John's going to go full circle in verse 18. He talks about no one has ever seen God. Some people have seen God's vapor trail. Remember Moses, good old Moses. He's so honest with God. And he says, you know, can I be the first guy, the only guy that's ever seen you? And God says, you know, I'd love to do that, Mo, but, you know, it'd fry your hard drive, buddy. It would just kill you. So I'll tell you what, you hide behind this rock, I'll put my hand over you, and I'll let you watch my vapor trail. And of course, Moses' face glowed for months just seeing God's vapor trail. And I've often thought every morning when Moses got up and he wasn't shaving, we know that. But because I've seen the movie. But when he got up and looked in the mirror and saw his face glowing, I'll bet you he was saying, thank you, thank you, thank you for not showing me your whole self. I would be dead. But no one has ever fully seen all that God is. But God, the only begotten, we looked at that word monogenes last week, the only offspring of the only biological offspring of the family stock of God, Jesus. Jesus has made him known to us, the NIV says. That's a little bit weak. The King James is even worse. It says has declared him. We'll look at the fullness of that word. So John has come full circle by verse 18. He started out saying that the expression of God, the Word, Jesus, was in the beginning when the beginning began. When the on button was pushed for the time-space continuum, he was already there. He was with God. That's a word of companionship, relationship. It's a word of place as well. He was with God, but he was God. And he was with God in the beginning. So now in verse 18, he says, God, the only begotten, not the only begotten of God. He says that earlier, but he says God the only begotten, meaning that Jesus was biologically produced, but he was also God. So John's come full circle. These are big, huge truths. Today we're just looking at the part of it that finishes verse 14, but we see the words grace and truth twice in here. And anytime you see something twice, it's worth taking a close look at it. So let's start at verse 14, and I'll read all the way through verse 18. There is just a little bit of an interruption in verse 15 of the flow. Don't know exactly why he does this twice in this first chapter. Remember that John, the guy that wrote this, was a disciple of John the Baptist. In fact, many people were convinced John the Baptist was the Messiah, until John himself says, no, I'm not him, which we'll look at next week. But he said things about Jesus. He told them about somebody that was coming, that it was hard for them to imagine that anybody but John the Baptist could be Messiah, because he was exactly what they expected. Appearances can be so deceiving, because so often God gives us things we don't expect. Even when we believe he's going to answer prayer, sometimes he doesn't answer it exactly the way that we thought. And that stumbles a lot of people. The longer you know the Lord, the more exciting that becomes, because you realize, you know, he's got better ideas than I do. So he throws in a little thing in verse 15 about John. It's like he just, remember, John the apostle, remembering John the Baptist, you know how it is with old people. Well, no, you don't, because none of you are old. Gwen could tell you, but she's in heaven and she's not old anymore. So, but you remember details sometimes later in life that they just jump in the middle of a conversation. He was remembering something that John the Baptist said about Jesus. It sounds like a riddle. It sounds like a medieval riddle. It sounds like something Robin Hood would, you know, ask the Sheriff of Nottingham. It's got that the whole medieval riddle thing to it. We'll talk about it this morning if I ever get over my preamble. One other little note, biblical interpretation note. Every time in this gospel you see the name John spoken of, it's not the guy that wrote it. It's John the Baptist, because he never mentions himself by name. It's a modesty thing. So in verse 15, the John he's talking about is not him. It's John the Baptist. Verse 14, John chapter 1. The Word who made everything, the Word who holds it all together, the Word became flesh, human, and made his dwelling among us. There's a huge parenthetical phrase in the middle of this, and the syntax would be better if I read it this way. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us, full of grace and truth. We have seen his glory, the glory of the only begotten who came from the Father. That would be more proper in syntax. I just put parenthetical brackets around the phrase, we have seen his glory, the glory of the only begotten who came from the Father. John the Baptist testifies, present tense, interesting, testifies, because he was dead, he didn't have a head anymore. John testifies concerning him. He cries out saying, this was he of whom I said, here's the riddle, he who comes after me has surpassed me because he was before me. Na, 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 na. It's sort of like a little Jeopardy question, isn't it? I love this verse, verse 16. From the fullness of his grace, we have all received one blessing after another. The Amplified Bible is fabulous there. It says, blessing heaped upon blessing, gift heaped upon gift, favor heaped upon favor out of his fullness. For the law was given through Moses, grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has ever seen God, but God the only begotten, who is at the Father's side, has made him known. I love the word that the old English word that our NIV translates side. It's the word bosom. And there's something about this. In fact, when I was writing my notes, I took out my wallet and the very first picture in my little accordion picture thing is a picture of me and my daddy. And we were on a sailing trip somewhere up in the islands of Canada. And we're standing on a dock with big grins on our faces and sunburns on our faces. And I had my arm around him and he had his arm around me and we were squeezing one another to where the cutting off circulation, you know, because I was just so glad to have him there. He was my friend and my daddy and he was glad to have me there. And that's the word that's the picture in my mind when I think of Jesus, the only begotten of God in God's bosom. It's a word of intimacy and closeness. I think of my dad and I. So let's back up to verse 14. We'll do a little bit of a recap. It's a bunch of people that are here this week that weren't here last week. You can pick up the CD and you'll get a lot more detail. But like I said, I can't remember everything I said because of the little emergency that we had in the middle. But we're creeping our way through this and we can take as long as we want, so I can always make up for it if I don't get everything this week. The Word became human. The word translated flesh it's almost a rude word in Greek. When it could be used of any living thing that's made out of meat. It could be used of animals, but when it's used of a human, it just simply means everything that would make someone completely human. All of the limitations, including mortality. And the verb in the sentence is important. It's a punctiliar action, verb tense, which means at a definite point in time, genomai, the word became. It means Jesus, the eternal word that before the time-space continuum on button was pushed, that word, that eternal word at a given point in time became something, took on a form that he had never taken on previously. Something brand new at a given point in time. And that form was he became fully human. We talked about last week, we spent all of our time last week talking about why that is important. In the writing of this gospel, John is counteracting early Gnosticism, which came from Greek intellectuals primarily, that said that, you know, yes, we believe, we've heard all the testimonies of what Jesus did, but the one thing we have trouble believing is that he was a human. I was listening to that old James Taylor song about when Jesus was a sailor when he walked upon the water, forsaken, almost human, he sank beneath our wisdom like a stone. And I always want to go, hey, he wasn't almost human. He was fully human. Yes, he was fully God. Philippians 2 tells us he emptied himself of his rights as God. And last week, without going into all the details, please pick up the CD because there's a lot of reasons why it was important that he be flesh, that he be human. His temptation, which says he was tempted in every way just like you are. His temptation would be meaningless if it wasn't real temptation. He wouldn't be the high priest praying for you that he is if he just breezed right through life and nothing affected him, nothing fazed him. It was important to realize he wasn't Clark Kent, and he was a Superman in disguise as Clark Kent. He didn't dash into a phone booth, change in his Messiah outfit, and work miracles. One thing that a lot of church people do not realize about Jesus, maybe it's the whole superhero Marvel comic thing that we have in our culture, But Jesus lived his life fully human. In every respect, he lived his life exactly the way he's asking you to live your life. He lived it in utter and complete dependence upon his Father. He said, I don't do anything that the Father doesn't tell me to do. I don't say anything the Father doesn't tell me to say. I make no judgments about anything or anybody except as I hear from my Father. And that's important because he fully, we looked at this Wednesday night when we looked at the place of the law. He fully, in every way, fulfilled the requirements of the law. The only human that ever did it. If he wasn't human, his sacrifice wouldn't have any meaning. He lived out the life that, admittedly, he couldn't live without depending completely on his Heavenly Father. Remember, he came and said, look, I haven't come to abolish the law. I've come to fulfill it. He said, the tiniest little character of the law is going to fade away until. And we looked Wednesday night at that fabulous word until, which means that the law had a temporary aspect to it. Once it had done its work for humans and we came to trust in Jesus, it ceases to have the same place in our lives. Jesus said, until everything has been accomplished, it's not going to pass away. But the very last words that he said were, it is accomplished. He lived the sinless life. He fully met the requirements of the law forever. And then he died. And in that act, here's what he says. He said, I will trade you straight across what I have just earned. I earned righteousness and a place with God. I kept all of the law my whole life. I never made one mistake. I'll trade you straight across what I've earned, and I'll take what you deserve because you haven't kept the law. The wages of that kind of a life would be that you would deserve to die and be separated from God. He said, I'll die instead. I'll trade you the righteousness that I've earned and I'll give that to you. And I'll take what you deserve on myself. That's the good news. None of that would have had any meaning had he not been human. I find it really interesting that the very first heresy that plagued the church didn't question the deity of Jesus. It questioned the humanity of Jesus. There were still tens of thousands of witnesses alive who had seen miracles. Who saw there were dead people who weren't dead anymore. I mean, that's pretty hard to argue, evidence to argue with. So they didn't doubt that something godlike had happened. But some people, especially the Greeks, had trouble believing that he was really human. So the word became flesh was important. Made his dwelling among us. That, by the way, the NIV is just so weak. Every English translation is weak, except perhaps the Amplified, simply because it just fattens things and doesn't even try to do a word-to-word. The words are just too big. When it says he made his dwelling among us, remember last week we said John is saying he was here temporarily. The word means to pitch a tent. It means he camped out for a while with us. Why was that important to know? Well, because they watched that body get spit on and brutalized and beaten and put to death and buried in the ground. And of course, they all saw Jesus in a new body and an eternal one 3 days later. So the fact that the body that he took on, all of its limitations, all of its mortality, the fact that they watched it. I remember reading a story that a medical doctor did this. Probably all of the nurses and doctors in our church would find this fascinating. I found it kind of gruesome. But he just talked about how nobody could have survived what Jesus went through and just swooned and, you know, sort of passed out. And then the disciples hit him, and then he came to know. He had to have died. There's no medical way that a human body could have survived. He was dead. And then he was not. And those are all important facts, and John is an eyewitness. He's the last of the eyewitnesses. So that's why this gospel is so important. The Word became human, made his dwelling temporarily, camped out among us, full of grace and truth. That's where we're going to start today. But it says, we have studied, is the closest synonym to the Greek word. We've seen, it's very watered down. We've gazed at, we studied intently his glory, the glory of the only begotten who came from the Father. We're going to see that phrase twice in here. We spent time on it last week. So I'm not going to give you the Greek word now. I'll wait till we hit in a few verses. By the way, it's the same Greek word that appears in John 3:16. God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten, monogenes. It's a biological word. It really bothers me that the NIV says one and only instead of only begotten. It leaves out the biology of it. However, to be fair to my NIV study Bible, it does footnote it and say, only begotten. Please don't leave the begotten out because it's biology, and we'll talk about that in a minute. Full of grace and truth. Later down in verse 17, he says, the law was given through Moses. Grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. I think if you look at this whole passage, it tells you a lot. Jesus said, if you want to know what God is like, watch me. John says in verse 18 that though no one has ever seen all that God is, God the only begotten has made him understood and known to us. He's put him on exhibit to us. And it's interesting that when Jesus came to show the world what God is like, he didn't come enforcing the law. He came full of grace and truth. I'm going to vent a little bit today. I'm warning you. Because the failure of Christianity, and Christianity in terms of the church, is an abysmal failure at representing Jesus properly. Some churches more than others. But one of the failures of the church, especially around in this area, what I've seen, is the church thinks its job is to enforce God's law when Jesus himself didn't come to enforce God's law. He came filled with grace and truth. Hard to find churches that are filled with grace and truth. And yet we wear his name. And so it's important. We'll spend some time talking about that today. We have gazed at his glory. We looked at that word last week. The Greek word is the word doxa, D-O-X-A. The Hebrew word, it's fun to say, is chabad, C-H-A-B or V, depending on modern or ancient Hebrew, O-D, chabad. Ichabod, remember Ichabod Crane? The word Ichabod means the glory has departed. It means glory is not there anymore. Interesting little linguistic note. But Chavad is the word for God's glory. It's the one in Psalms where it says, all of creation is declaring God's glory. The heavens are declaring God's glory day after day after day. So God's glory is what Brendan Manning calls unedited God.